Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Every Tuesday on the program, we look at the property market in South Africa. And today, well, the country's rental market has surged nearly 46% in the past decade, with buy-to-let investors driving much of that growth. But while the returns can be strong, I guess there are risks as well, particularly without something called a solid lease agreement. And with us to look at that in a little more detail, he's been on our program before, is Grant Smee, who's Chief Executive Officer of Only Realty Property Group. I want to look at the do's and don'ts of lease agreements, tenant screening, and how to legally safeguard your rental investment. So, Grant, welcome. Good evening. Thank you, as always, for talking to us. Are landlords, in your opinion, taking lease agreements seriously enough in today's market?
Evening, Jeremy. So I'd say there's sort of a mixed bag, really. There's a lot of landlords who take a very light approach to these agreements and sort of look at it as something that they just put in place to receive the money. But there's a lot of landlords who do take it far more seriously, and it's important that they do, because that document actually dictates the entire relationship between tenant and landlord.
And to their detriment, if this isn't a solid gold written in stone contract, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, firstly, it must be down in writing. I think we've come across so many verbal lease agreements that have been in place over the years, where actually the he said, she said scenario plays out very badly, ultimately, for the landlord, because tenants' rights are often seen as a priority to the landlords, simply because there's a limitation on eviction procedures and other processes that are limited to the court and need to be reduced to writing.
So, Grant, in your opinion then, what are some of the more common mistakes that landlords make when drawing up that lease?
So I think the first thing to note is that lease agreements are dictated by the Consumer Protection Act. So they do need to, they can't fall foul of that act, and you can't contract out of the requirements around the Consumer Protection Act. So, for example, the breach clause, which needs to be very, very clear on how notice is given to a tenant in terms of their breach, what the process of rectification is, and therefore what happens after the fact. So I think at its core, the breach clause is vitally important, but also the clarity around some of the clauses around rental payment terms, where the deposit's held, how maintenance repairs are dealt with, the termination periods in terms of the lease agreement, and then the lease duration. All those things must be very, very clearly defined and sort of recorded in that lease agreement.
And how should a notice of breach be properly communicated then?
So in terms of the Consumer Protection Act, you need to give a notice of breach in writing with reference to the specific clause that has been breached. And then you give 20 working days notice for that the rectification of that breach. If that doesn't happen on the 21st working day, you're able to give or you terminate the lease agreement, where then that's really the first step to the eviction process, legal eviction process. So at the termination of the agreement, the tenant becomes a illegal occupier of the property, and then you can start the process of eviction.
And what about the actual document itself? You do get templates from the internet, for instance. Are those effective enough, and would it hold up in court if there is a dispute?
Yeah, no, you know, I think you do get some templated agreements online that are very, very good. I think it's about the source that it comes from. There's one very good source that gets used a lot by even professionals in the industry. I think what you need to be careful is two things. Is firstly, buying templates that are either on the internet or on a shelf. And secondly, buying or not reading lease agreements that are provided to you by industry, because some of those have been sort of your part-time lawyers have put those together. So it's important that whatever lease agreement you're going to use, you go through it, you make sure that you understand the clauses and how they apply, and it includes everything that you require, and it doesn't sort of speak against any of the acts that are relevant to rental housing or rental in the country.
And Grant, in your experience, given, as I mentioned at the start of our conversation, the rental market in South Africa surging in the past 10 years or so, up by almost 50%, how often do lease disputes these days actually end up in costly legal battles?
Yeah, so I mean, actually, you know, in our space, at least we act as mediators a lot of the times. So we sort of try and manage that process, but it doesn't end up in court that often. But where it does end up in court, that's where it becomes extremely expensive. So I think that you want to try and avoid that as much as possible by having a few things, which is firstly a very, very clear lease agreement, which dictates the relationship, and where maybe there's a dispute in terms of that, you really need to go through a process of clear communication and a conversation rather than end up in court. But because when it, like I say, when it does end up in court, it is very expensive.
And tell me, Grant, how difficult to process if there is a dispute is it to mediate?
So, I mean, you know, how difficult are the parties and how open are they to sort of move, standing their ground or moving? I think it's a process of ongoing conversation and clarity and recording all aspects of the agreement. So, you know, when payments are made, how payments are made, what maintenance was promised. So I think the biggest thing, the biggest saving grace for a lot of businesses out there and landlords and tenants would be making sure everything is reduced to writing no matter what, because no matter how well the relationship starts, often when there's a dispute, it can turn relatively ugly and you need to refer to black and white. So that's important.
Grant, before we even get to the lease phase or signing of the lease phase, you also recommend that tenant screening is just as important as the lease itself. I mean, that makes perfect sense. How does one go about screening the tenant, though?
So the traditional route is just simple credit checks and then employment verification. So making sure that the person who's employed and is deriving their income from the place that they are. The other one is the rental history checks and previous landlord checks. So we recommend going more than one landlord into the history of the tenant. So maybe try and go two or three landlords into history. Where that's not possible, you know, character references can be provided as well by certain individuals. But it's just about using also your gut feel in terms of that individual, the information they're giving you, rather than, you know, if your property is sitting empty, getting desperate and overlooking sort of red flags that you might miss otherwise. So it's important that you take your time in screening the tenant, making sure everything makes sense and everything aligns. And if there is a gap, make sure you investigate the gap, because that ultimately does or usually does show that there's something going on. But on the flip side, I recommend that tenants certainly look at trying to screen their landlords as well, making sure that they have a conversation with the rental agents, for example, in terms of maintenance and how that landlord deals with those things. Because, you know, as much as you can end up as a landlord with a bad tenant, on the flip side, a tenant can end up with a bad landlord similarly.
Just a final one, subletting via Airbnb. You'll tell me that this is also becoming possibly a hidden legal trap for landlords. In what respect?
So, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of it's particularly in Cape Town at the moment, but all over the country, there are people that are renting properties for the purpose of either subletting a whole thing or part of it on Airbnb. And I think it's important that if you want to prohibit the use of the property in that way, that it's definitely defined within the lease agreement, because it is becoming such common practice that tenants will take advantage of the lack of any reference to it to be able to make use of that the property for subletting. So it's important that your subletting clause includes or excludes the use or putting the property on Airbnb or other short-term sites, or in fact even subletting in its entirety. You must make reference to that.
That is a lot of useful and valuable advice. Grant Smee, thank you very much indeed. Chief Executive Officer of the Only Realty Property Group. I appreciate your time tonight.
Heart Business on Heart 1027 with MoneyWeb.